Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM. You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, as usual this time of the day here on Eagle FM. Here to keep you company until the hour of 6 is yours truly, Helmut and Dwight, with Home Run. It's Tuesday, right? Right.
I can confirm it's Tuesday, Helmut.
It's Tuesday.
Tuesday the 12th of May. The month of May with all its public holidays, which is also...
Oh, yeah. Speaking of those public holidays, boy, are they coming up.
Yep.
Well, but the thing about public holidays is, from the look of things, 100 years from now, every day will be a public holiday.
Yeah,
because all
those things. Yeah,
the problem with Africans is every time a leader trips and falls, we mark it as a public holiday, and when they fall sick, public holiday. When they die, we mark it as public holiday. And
imagine if the U.S. did all that.
Oh boy, they wouldn't be.
And they have how many presidents already?
They wouldn't be having an economy.
Something presidents they've had so far.
Jeez.
Now imagine if they did that.
Now imagine if the British did that.
With every king and queen they had.
Yeah.
Some depressing stuff. Yeah, ne?
I know. Yeah, so let's talk
at
about...
At least in our scenario, we didn't.
Yeah, so let's talk about artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things that's... we don't have a lot of... tech control over it.
Yeah,
because we don't have a lot of tech or digital control over it. When it comes to control of those things, we are really, really, really on the surface.
Yep.
Because all those tools are coming out of all the tech tools are either coming out of China and to some very lesser degree Europe, but the US is dominating on that. I don't know if we should say the U.S. is dominating that, because most of the, because at this point, the U.S. and Israel are sort of like conjoined twins. Yeah, on a lot of a spectrum from both politically, economically, financially, and all that. Now, here's the thing. For countries that are developing like Namibia now, it was last year that we did AI readiness assessment report. And one thing that was realized in that conclusion is that as in everything else, before you implement it on a national level, you need the right guardrails in place, and regulations is a good place to start. And from the look of things, I think we want to implement AI as fast as possible, which is why, and I'm saying that because of, the scandal that came out of South Africa, was that earlier this month or late last month?
End of last month.
Like, they had one job. What? Not two, one job.
Why are we citing them, Albert?
Look,
it's embarrassing for an industrial country now,
exactly,
like South Africa. For literally their policymakers to go and AI, it's like throwing Dringo Pop with an AI machine into the mixer, and then asking the AI while it's in the machine, write a policy for you, for us.
Look, it's a very terrible template.
They ChatGPT the whole thing. You know, it was so embarrassing. I didn't even read the article. I was just like, oh my goodness.
Look, the most painful thing is, that raises up a lot of suspicions. Like, if you have ChatGPT this,
what have you ChatGPT?
Exactly.
What have you cooked up in between? And what citations did you use? Do you know what's very funny, Hamoud?
Yeah.
Which I've noted from policy documents, especially like our policy documents in the movie that you and I, we've gone through For example, you know, remember the back in last year, the tourism / mining policy document, the joint policy document between Ministry of Environment and Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy,
mm-hmm.
where from what we could see from the executive summary,
mm-hmm.
is that literally this document is supporting more the mining
than the
by not actually trying to sustain the tourism.
Yeah.
So, and just right there from that scenario, we could literally just make a deduction of, okay, so this thing seems like the one ministry told the other ministry, you write the document, we will just say, okay. So, and what we saw also was a scenario of, there wasn't actually full, like, community-based resource management applied, mm-hmm. even in that scenario, because the only tool that actually helps rural community-based resource management, or if we could use the other term, rural community development, is that tourism is the best mechanism to do this. Not mining has done it. Not even agriculture is sustainable enough to help with rural community development.
Mm-hmm.
But tourism is the only activity that does this. Now, case in point is I have not seen like citations that the policymakers or the policy drafters use to motivate a plan, except for probably the 2018 transport policy of Ministry of Works and Transport, which obviously was predominantly authored by, GIZ, because in it says the known fact, when you say public transport, there is no private in public. Public transport means there's an adequate investment or an adequate ownership aspect of the public sector in the transport scenario. And they didn't cite fully, but they sort of like sketched or drew from a known template, which is the only citation that I can actually prove to.
Mm-hmm.
When I looked at back in 2022, or was it 2023, at the minerals beneficiation strategy between the now non-existent Ministry of Trade and Industry, or Industry and Trade, and the Ministry of Mines and Energy at the time, they also didn't cite like a proper example. When I looked at the local content policy that came out after that, they also didn't cite a example or country of any note. Even when we looked at the e-health, the digital health policy by the Ministry of Health,
mm-hmm.
we were also like, "What's the good is this? You know, what's this for such a thick document? What are we saying here?"
Mm-hmm.
And even the last year's the education one. What was that education policy, Almut? That other education policy that we looked at.
Oh, John.
It was also a thick document, man. It was a document based upon. What was that strategy? Or was that 2024? No, I think that was 2024, before the new administration came in, which they also, we didn't see a citation of or a linkage to a known example in the world. You know, if you give me a plan, many cases, some people will ask you, where has this plan
Where has this been used and what challenge did they go through and what can we learn from that?
And what is the current situation of that plan or how has that plan worked? We have not seen something like that. If you haven't noticed about all our policies so far from what you and I have seen, except for the transport policy. The transport policy is the only one that actually draws from an actual template that exists around the world. Public transport does not say private anyway in it, or private ownership anyway in it. So, yeah, that's where it leaves us with. And obviously, getting into the policy side of things, our discussion is obviously based upon the recent AI public stakeholder engagement, which you had the unpleasant experience of hearing more an angle grinder than the actual speaking taking place. I'm really sorry for that, Helmut, for that quality of audio, but there's nothing I could do because this was at the Commerce Regional Office. And someone left the whole door open and there was a work team on the other side who just decided, you know what? Okay, guys, let's give maximum performance value there are people in this hall. Let's show them we are actually doing work at the regional. I don't know if they worked for the regional council, but still.
Well, I think those angle grinder guys did it on purpose, because you all were talking about AI, something that's threatening to take everyone's job. So, let's just ruin the discussion before everything is implemented. But when it comes to regulation of not just AI, just everything technology related, a very scary picture was sketched by the US Congress during the TikTok, when they had the TikTok CEO.
Yeah.
These were lawmakers that sat down a tech company CEO. And these are the public representatives. These are the people that that are supposed to be speaking and representing the people on the ground. The questions we're asking indicated one thing. They didn't understand crap about technology. Now, these are the people that will regulate something that is growing faster than the tech industry itself can keep up with.
Yeah.
That's a scary picture.
And now they want to, in many cases, try and switch off the thing. In some cases.
Exactly. Because now, look, the picture being drawn here is the picture that a lot of us were able to pick up from the U.S. Congress is that this is not just for the U.S.
Yeah.
It basically became, an overall global question in terms of adaptation of technology, that do our lawmakers, not just in the U.S., just the world over, do they understand the technology that they will have to write laws to regulate?
Yeah.
And that picture drew a scary picture of, no, they don't. Because I think there's Mr. Hudson of a representative from North Carolina asked one of the most ridiculous questions. It went viral. The one who said, when I turn on my Wi-Fi, does TikTok connect to my Wi-Fi?
Yes, it uses.
And Mr. Shaw was if the user turns on the Wi-Fi, because TikTok is an app. Like every app, it needs Wi-Fi. That's the most basic question you can ever ask. And he wasn't the only one. That whole hearing was riddled with a bunch of people that were asking questions, about an industry they were entrusted to regulate. And clearly, based on their questions, they didn't understand a thing.
No, they didn't. Which actually backfired in that hearing's true aim, because the assumption was, Helmut, that these guys obviously came to they came, with prior knowledge.
Exactly. That's always the assumption.
And the only that's the assumption on our side. The viewers that saw the hearing is that a MP comes to a discussion having read up on something of the industry before asking certain questions, because the first question you then got to ask is, Helmut, does this MP not use Wi-Fi in their office?
That's the question.
Does this MP not use other applications? Do they have a smartphone? Firstly, let's ask, do they have a smartphone on their names with a SIM card in it? And does this MP know how to send messages?
Via social media, for example.
Yeah, like what happened with the South African MP last year, the one with the Matlanga Commission.
Yeah.
When Mkhwanazi told her, why did you send a document that you were clearly told the previous day at the hearing, the start of the hearing, you were not supposed to send outside of this hearing so as to contain any information.
Rookie mistakes.
And which showed everyone, which was also the exact same hearing example where you made the reference of where Mkhwanazi told them, if you say delete, what was that thing?
Oh, no,
view once.
View once.
If you view
Man,
once.
Man, Mkhwanazi ruined view once for us.
For all of us. He literally said, it doesn't mean that we can't get the view once.
No, we can.
Which obviously shows that the technology out there is technically built on a false promise. Because you, specifically, we now talk about user rights.
Yeah, user rights, yeah.
That means, Helmut, anything you send can be intercepted and stored permanently by any surveillance agency of the state.
Yep.
That's literally what Mkhwanazi said. Now, obviously, in a Namibian context, you just have to assume it is here.
Yeah.
You just have to assume.
Look, in any country, just to, you know, to fight crime better, the law enforcement officers are given tech tools to actually to enable them to do that. Take, for example, if I commit a crime and then, I'm arrested. So they will need all the information in their investigation to, to prove to court on whether or not I did the, on whether or not I committed the crime. Mm. And one of those things is like these days, our phones basically contain more information. So they will get my phone, and even if I, even if I say, I'm not giving you the password, they have tools that will enable them to basically, bypass all the security measures that comes with my device, so that they can get all the information that will help them with their investigation. So police officers are given these tools. So now that's the also another scary part of what of what Mkwanazi said. Not actually about what Mkwanazi said. About the fact that he was talking to lawmakers that did not know that.
Now, that's unfortunately how I feel for that TikTok CEO, because Mr. Companies was now split into two. This was now the part that he owns, which is TikTok Global, and the part for America is must now sold to a local American company.
I think that's now under Palantir, Peter Thiel's, some of them.
So,
oh boy, that's a bad idea.
Which was a bad idea.
Terrible idea. Admittedly.
Because it, what it technically showed everyone, Helmut, was literally, okay, in the global race of the tech development, research and development, all the other scenarios, America can force a company which is registered in the US.
Yeah.
America can force a company registered in the US, which has global reach, to break up so that its global operations are owned one side, but its American operations one side.
Yeah.
However, no one has done that with Meta. Everyone has the opportunity to do that to Meta, to Google.
Especially with Meta's terrible reputation in terms of data security. To Microsoft now?
Because now it just shows everyone, okay.
So it's terrible precedence.
But the worst thing is, America did this to an American citizen. The CEO of TikTok is an American citizen.
Oh, no, you should have followed that. So, what country are you... what country are you a nationality of? Singapore. So, do you have any other nationality? No, I'm from Singapore. Sir. So, have you ever recently, do you have any passport of any? You know what?
They were literally fishing for the Chinese army.
It got there. I think Homeboy was just tired of beating around the bush and just went straight. Okay, you know what? We are talking about China here. Let's get to the chase.
Because TikTok started in China.
TikTok is a subsidiary of Biden's.
Yeah. ByteDance was his company. And ByteDance is. Wait, Hamut. ByteDance had a partner in China. Who is the partner? It's not NetEase. I know it's not NetEase. That's not the gaming giant. Is it not Tencent? No, Tencent is the other. Tencent was inadvertently owned. Guess by who? The guys that owned MultiChoice, the South Africans, Naspers.
Really? No, that I didn't see coming.
And at the heart of everything, the US politicians were just as confused because a lot of them at that stage were trying to target Tencent, but Tencent is technically owned by Naspers.
This is where you are seeing, I think, the president, the picture that has been drawn in with regards to how regulation is drawn is that politics always plays a role. Like in the TikTok discussion, for example, that was purely political. It had nothing to do with national security.
And there wasn't even any factual basis to force the company to sell the American operation.
Yeah, they couldn't prove the national security aspect without roping in Meta, because Meta is notoriously known for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... Now, what that picture draws from the TikTok Congress hearing back in 2023, and the whole Makatla Commission, where Mkwanazi was now telling South African, during the Commission of Inquiries, that he was basically giving them a crash course of how WhatsApp works, and a lot of these people were going, wait. This is how it works. This is how it works. And again, the painful part is these are the lawmakers that will regulate the industry they don't understand.
Mm. They don't understand.
Even paint an even more disturbing picture. Apart from this industry having a wide spread of application globally, the owners, not the country where TikTok is from or WhatsApp is from or Facebook or Signal is from, no. The tech giants, tech companies are known to have this ego where they are not very good at listening to representatives. And now, to top it off, some of them have so much money, they fund political campaign. Now, compound that and you have a disaster on your hands. Because now you have a bunch of politicians that don't understand a thing about tech. You have some that are so terrible, they can barely, put airtime in their own phone, let alone, connect TikTok to Wi-Fi. That was painful. And now you have politicians that barely understand a basic technology. Not all of them. The majority don't.
Yeah.
That's one thing that's been proven. Or more like shown from all the occurrences related to technological discussion and, in governance spaces. And the second thing is now you are looking at is tech companies. Private companies are already, they already have their claws so deep in governance. The UN Secretary General had to address that earlier this year during his 2026 priorities press conference. We are seeing a lot of shift in governing power, not from the government, not from the governors or the public representatives to the people, but from the public representatives to tech companies. So that means these guys are going to have a bonanza. Because they'll just be putting out stuff that they know that a bunch of people that are going to regulate them don't understand a thing or two about it. They don't understand the very basics. Mm-hmm. So that is that's why one thing that was pointed out in the recently held stakeholder engagements on AI with regards to its adoption in Namibia is everyone must get involved. And yeah, believe me, you want to get involved because the consequences of technology are going to come.
Yeah.
And when they do, if you are not involved, we are going to start doing what we do best, pointing fingers. That politician is just not doing, who allowed these laws to, but while they held consultations, you were here.
Mm. And you said yes.
Uh-huh.
You were cheering in the front line.
Yeah. Wait to get to the buffet because, well, it was almost 1 o'clock.
Do you know what was one of the funny things about the stakeholder engagement that came about?
Yeah.
So, in the crowd with us, it was a pretty small crowd. I mean, I think you could have heard from when we were all asked to identify who we are. One of the guys, like three seats away from me, is a lecturer at one of the institutions here in Windhoek, and he teaches like the computer training and all that other mechanisms primarily. So we got to the Q&A session of the stakeholder engagement, and the technical analysis committee, the TAC, that's meant for commas,
mm-hmm.
Included, I think, two women, three men. The one lady comes from a IT company here in Windhoek. And she gave an explanation specifically that if you want to make sure about that you're using the right AI tools in out there for whatever work you're doing,
yeah,
use an AI to download another AI. And then when we got to the Q&A, the lecturer now next to me went like, so you want to use an AI to download another AI. What kind of problems are you creating for yourself right there? Which also, I didn't pick up on her response because I was like, an AI to download another AI. That sounds truly like the compounding problem situation that you mentioned just now a few minutes back by saying, so if you really don't understand the one AI, now it goes and downloads an AI that is probably even further complicated than what it should be. What are you doing?
It sounds unnecessarily redundant.
It really does. Look, I would understand, for example, Helmut, if you had an account, for example, let's say like I've got an account to Shutterstock and I've got an account to Canva.
Mm-hmm.
And both these two digital companies, they offer you a premium subscription. You get a free subscription, you get a premium subscription. Now, Shutterstock is everything from photos to paintings to any art that you design and stuff like that. It's the same thing for WeTransfer as well. I also have an account with WeTransfer, also a free account. I just use the free features. Now, with Shutterstock, the important thing from this is that Shutterstock now has access to multiple AI mechanisms to help you with as broad a generative menu as possible. If you're going to be one of those people who don't want to paint or to draw anymore, you're now just going to type in a prompt into one of the modules that they've, that into one of the particular AI generative features that they've got connected to your subscription, and it's going to generate the said particular thing for you, which in itself is already problematic, because all they are now doing is literally just giving you a basket of all the AI. Instead of you having individual AI accounts, yeah, now you got a basket of all the, but you don't know which one is generating what for you. Those are particularly the concerns.
Now, look, when it comes to when it comes to regulation, just like every tool that is, just like every tool that that will be adopted by people, and these are people irrespective of your religion, gender, or whatever differences that we like to schmuck on each other and then use those ones to justify kicking the heck out of each other. It doesn't matter. Human beings are just human beings. Any tool that we come up with, we always figure out a way to, commit evil with it. And, well, my excellent example I like to use is a knife, for example. Take a knife, you put it in the hands of a chef, and you have a meal, as long as you don't piss off the chef. But if you put it in the hands of a serial killer, you have a body count. Literal body count, not the Gen Z translation of a body count. Jesus. Now we have to explain everything. Now, the thing is, AI is no exception. AI is going to be adopted whether you don't have to like it, because it has a lot of advantages in terms of application. It will help a lot of people to, it makes life easy in a lot of ways that we do our different, our respective ways of, of doing our jobs. But as in everything else, it has its pros and cons. And one of those pro is that it helps you, do things much quicker. Just verify, for the love of God, verify. Just verify and verify and verify. One thing I've come to learn is that I have had a few of my friends, reach out to me to help them out with some of their schoolworks. And I'm not a brainiac, a genius, no. They're just asking a friend, and I also ask them, for help with my schoolwork every time that I get stuck. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that, when it comes, one thing that I've observed with some of them is that, they'll send me 2-3 questions that they want me to help them with, and that will be 24 hours before the deadline. Now, I'm sitting there telling them, okay, this is a very nice question, and I would like to go to the National Library or the Supreme Court Library right now, and believe me, I know my way around these two buildings. I will need time to go to the National Library or go to the Supreme Court Library. And they all have different closing and opening times. And the Supreme Court Library is insanely strict. Not strict in a negative way. It's just that they are strict when it comes to time. When it's 1 o'clock, off you go. Come back at 2-4. One thing I like about the National Library is you can sit in through your lunch hour and basically read through. Supreme Court is like, yeah, we don't want you to steal our laws or whatever it is that they like to protect in that building. But anyway, so one thing that I keep telling them is that just give me these things at least 2-3 days in advance so that I can time my schedule properly. is when it comes to research, for the most part, I'm very traditional. I like hard copy books because I find them easy to reference. And that's because I've used hard copies more with my, you know, with my schoolwork. So I frequently reference books than soft copies. So for soft copies, I still have to verify, where do you put the name of the author of the article, when it was written, where it was published, the title, and the information it entails, and all that. Now, the thing with AI is that AI is known for one thing at this point, because since a significant part of it is still under development, and a large part of it, AI likes to, scratch its head, it doesn't have any physical form, but anyway, you get the point. It's like someone that scratches their head to come up with something to say. And when you ask them, so where did this information come from? That's when AI will gladly point you in a direction of what will look like a legitimate source. And a lot of people have now come to, a lot of people have gotten into trouble when they realize that the source that is provided them in this AI-generated, in this AI-generated response after they feed in a prompt, with a very legitimately looking source as a, as a reference, a lot of them have come to realize that when they follow up on that source, they've come to realize that the whole source is made up.
Yeah, which... I will just keep that witch hanging there, primarily because we obviously got a presentation at this public stakeholder engagement, and the presentation was done by two younger gentlemen, two younger presenters, who both have backgrounds in the information technology space, and they were highlighting, that AI could do this, could do that. They were speaking primarily to certain particular prompts and certain particular aspects of production that is being highlighted. For us, for example, like in the media space, Helmut, don't let an AI write your script for you. Even though there is a colleague that I know right here behind us, but I think she uses it sort of like as an editing tool. I won't mention names.
Mada will be committed today.
I won't mention names. She's highly religious, so I'm trying to avoid mentioning names.
Mada will be committed today.
But she uses ChatGPT. I also have a ChatGPT account. I only use it to test out last year when I had the AI training course. The concern from that is obviously I knew that the AI training course would give you, firstly, the introduction to the AI systems out there, mm-hmm. the platforms, how they are used, what you use them for, and then the second half of the course turned into how to fact check for AI, how to fact check for deep fake technology. And it was interesting to discover, Helmut, that one of the world's largest, public broadcasting companies, the German public broadcaster Deutsche Welle, they actually, and BBC, they both actually developed their own AI
model,
fact-checking, verification, and AI detection tools.
I think you need that.
We do need that. Yeah. Specifically in the media space.
Yeah, you need that.
We do need that.
Yeah.
Because all it takes now, for example, if you've got, what's the one from China? DeepSeek.
Yeah.
If you've got DeepSeek, or now that you can download AI onto your phone, and the AI can be searching what many people also forget.
And most browsers come built in with one already.
Already, yeah. Like all the Android platforms, you find Gemini in your inbox telling you, let's write an email. You didn't ask it to write emails, but you are just being prompted, let's write an email. Why? Why must I write an email?
It just wants to train using your ideas.
No way.
That's the whole point of AI at this point.
No way. So... that in itself is a concern, which is already an alarm bell, because you're being prompted, Helmut, for what you don't want to do, because it's up to you, the person. Now, remember when you spoke about governance?
Yeah.
Now, there's obviously a whole bunch of lovely literature being written how technology is literally also, I don't want to say zombifying, because the actual phrase I want to apply to is how our behaviors are actually being used. Now, remember, earlier today you shared a video with us on the work group, the video about the congressional hearing that took place at the start of the year. About screen time for children and young Americans.
Yeah.
And it was all about how these technologies are actually changing the behavior of humans.
Yeah, in terms of exposure. Learning.
Yeah, exposure to the technologies, the learning, the cognitive abilities of these young people, mm-hmm. which is literally also what the Danish education sector and now the Swedish education sector is.
Swedish have hopped in the bandwagon.
Yeah. They've all now realized that there's something wrong. It's the Swedes or the Finns, one of the two. They are now two Scandinavian guns. They realize now there's something wrong.
You know
wrong.
What? Let's come back to books.
Let's come back to books. Let's.
Do you know these that are hard copy books?
Do you know that we are busy? The one skill that we're losing the quickest, which is also the biggest skill associated to your identity, is handwriting. It's the quickest dying skill on the planet. It's the hardest to train, especially if you're someone like me that has the curse of handwriting.
Yeah.
I also met a guy who's literally writing curse of Helmut, like we were taught in primary school to write curse.
Yeah, I also did that in primary school.
Yeah, he literally writes it. I met this guy earlier today, and I saw, because he was filling in a waybill for me, and I saw his handwriting. I was like, wow, look at this guy.
He's a lost art.
He's literally doing the curse of I did back in high school, in primary school. Because from the primary school training, you discover your own handwriting.
Yeah.
You get taught the basic. Mm-hmm. How to connect the letters and make it flow. And then from there, it's up to you in the next years how you write, how you develop your own identity as a handwriting. It's a unique skill to develop, Emma, because of what, do you know why? You can identify people by their handwritings. I know my mother's handwriting. I know my father's handwriting. I know my sister's handwriting. My two elder brothers. And then my younger brother behind me, because he's the only one that doesn't write like us. There will also be further murder being committed.
You really gave me asking for.
So yeah, but it's an identity. Handwriting is an identity. Now, handwriting is deemed as the quickest dying human skill that we were taught for so long.
It's a good thing. Okay, it's both a good thing and interesting. You pointed to handwriting because, one thing, you know, when I was just, you know, had a little bit of, free time, I decided, you know what, I have to, you know, well, I tried chilling. I realized I'm still terrible, you know, I'm still as terrible at it as I was, as I has always been. So I decided to, you know, to pick up a foreign language. And one of the things that I kept, you know, getting for, you know, in all my research and more like, the most effective way is to learn a foreign language, not just a foreign language, to learn anything is writing.
It trains the brain.
Yeah. Writing. Well, you could sit and type it on your laptop, but nothing beats you just having the basic ink and paper and write it down.
Mm.
Just writing. Mm. So these are very simple things that we are looking, I'm not sure if it's something that has to do with the mind-body coordination on a much deeper level, compared to just, scrolling.
It's the same thing I would like with manual driving.
People
who were taught on manual driving, they know how to regulate the fuel they need. You'll be like on your last breath of octane in your petrol tank, man. But you will know up to what gear you can drive the car to get to the petrol station. The concern with automatic is that it's just put down your foot and go.
So everything is done by a computer somewhere.
It's automated.
Yeah.
And which in many cases, if you talk to many cab drivers, like I've spoken to over the past years, in a few times that I take cab, or like the past weeks that I've also taken cab,
is
that
a nightmare.
Many of the cab drivers and the Yango drivers tell you their nightmare, their headache that they suffer from automatic cars. Automatic gearbox cars consume a ton of their earnings for petrol, just petrol. Plus also, in many cases, since they are imported cars, these are not cars that the parts are easily available, because they import the Malaysian, Philippine, Thai, or Indonesian
models
of these cars. And they don't import directly from Japan, because Japan is obviously also a major car manufacturing country, but it also has a rich car culture. You will see with most countries that manufacture cars and that are home to car brands, like Japan and like the United States and like Germany and like France and like the UK up to a point, is that they all have car cultures. There's a history of this product being central to human activity. There is not a history in terms of AI being central to human culture. There's not.
I mean, it's fundamentally new.
It is fundamentally new. It is not, but it's also not a thing of Helmut like the cars. The cars are literally a reflection of manufacturing standards at a time and also national pride at a time. Because, you know, you would hear discussions of how the Americans are now enjoying the cars from the 90s and the 80s of Japan. Those cars are now sought after collector's items.
Yeah.
They can cost anywhere up to $1 million. It's a car that if you brought that car to Namibia, that car would have cost you just a decent 50, 70, 60,000 at its time. But now, because of the car's particular engineering standard at the time, and the engine it's got, and the lack of electronics in it, it's technically worth almost $1 million. Now, since there is this goal by humanity to industrialize, as you know, you reach a level of industrialization and you build upon that and you build upon that and you can just continue refining and refining and refining and refining until there's nothing technically to refine, but you move to the next shift, which is literally communication technology. Now, I'll bring you out a concern, Helmut. It's a concern that I didn't observe at the time, but I liked it. There's a joint venture between Honda and Sony, two companies that I'm a fan of. There's a joint venture between Honda and Sony, whereby they were going to develop their own EV, electric vehicle. Now, you would be asking me, Dwight, what history in car manufacturing does Sony have? I'll tell you, diddly squat, nothing. Then you'll ask me, okay, and Honda? Honda is everything. Okay, so what makes this joint venture so unique? Well, the one is purely technology, because Sony is now is one of the big market leaders in entertainment technology and in entertainment. Because Sony obviously owns a ton of copyright and intellectual property behind sound systems, interactive displays, you know, that display that you now find in the cars that have all the app extensions, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Interactive display.
By the way, you're not allowed, you know, to drive away with your phone, but you have this giant screen.
You've got this giant,
I don't know who came up with this
giant screen that you can reroute your phone through. Because you know how funny it is if someone comes to the stop and you're standing on the stop as a pedestrian and you hear the whole car is ringing. And you're like, it's it. Why did this guy not turn down his audio on his sound system? Yeah. So, okay, besides the embarrassing part, the embarrassing observation that's there, the joint venture then aimed was at the sort of like on the verge of moving into the EV race that we were now observing for the past 3 years, from 2023 up to now. So it was BYD, it was Tesla, it was all the other EV developers. And from that particular concern, you were going like, okay, so the next race would be between electric vehicle cars and hydrogen engines. Because Hyundai just went left field. Hyundai and Toyota, they just went on the other side saying, you know what, we've got the technology. We still want to give clients the vroom vroom. We don't want
experience.
We don't want to give you
radio silence.
We don't want to give you air conditioners on wheels. We don't want to hear people going like, you know, like it sounds like someone is switching on a lawnmower. No, not a lawnmower. Lawnmower is pretty loud.
Lawnmower is loud.
It's like someone is switching on an air conditioner and all you hear is just air driving past you. So, yeah. The concern is technically out there because the rapid developments in technology are obviously driving other changes. The only thing that I came to realization while sitting in that AI public stakeholder engagement helmet was that, do you know how easy probably it sounded to develop an AI?
Really?
Helmut, the thing just needs to learn. So you need to write code to tell the thing, go and learn.
I think the biggest challenge is where that information is going to be stored.
Yeah, it's the and the processing ability.
Oh yeah,
the processing ability, the energy.
That's where your data centers now.
The energy supply, the cooling, and quietly, if people did not realize, is that there are now all kinds of articles popping up that the AI boom is silently happening. The AI bubble is silently bursting because planned data centers in many countries, and especially in Europe and in North America, have just stopped. And now you've got the court case between Altman and Musk happening. Because Musk is suing Altman for apparently deviating from the original vision and mission that he stated and sold to the billionaires. But Altman was also a billionaire, which is also a question of, so these are two billionaires suing each other.
They all have the money, so they're good.
Yeah. And you should also... You should also see the jokes that people make about Grok on X, where everyone is just like, Grok, who is she? Grok, what is this? Grok, tell me about this. And then someone posts a meme just below that saying, where Grok is apparently answering, going like, I was not made for this. So, yeah. The particular functions being used for AI, in many cases, it's like mundane functions. The actual stories that people have discovered about AI's threat, specifically to our information systems, not yet to us as humans. Well, okay, besides the one AI theory that came up apparently, where AI was asked how does it solve the world's problems, and AI concluded, well, let's do away with humanity. Which is literally a Terminator statement.
That's Jarvis also.
It was a Terminator statement.
Reached the same...
No, it was Ultron, not Jarvis.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was Ultron. Ultron was like, look, I was designed to protect mankind from all threats. Be careful of how you use the word all. all threats. So the moment Ultron was brought online, the biggest threat that was identified to mankind was mankind. It was like, what? There's only one solution here.
Yeah. So Ultron quickly concluded with obviously his access to a lot of processing power because, and this is one of the things that even shocks me. Look, I can understand robotics, Helmut. I still don't understand AI. If you wanted supercomputer capabilities, you would have obviously designed a computer to literally say, okay, just increase the notch of your processing ability.
Like performance.
Yeah, that's it. Just increase the performance.
Yeah.
Just increase the memory. Just increase the storage space. And just increase the cooling. Now you are now rapidly building things so the AIs bounce between processing centers. Do you get it?
Yeah, I get it. Because what this brings us to is... There was a gold rush. And then there was a space race. There was an arms race. Now we have a nuclear race.
There was a colonial race.
Every time something new pops up, it becomes a race. And when it becomes a race, the reason behind its invention is lost somewhere in the process. Then everything becomes about process. Everything becomes about two useless things. Who gets there first? And how much money can we make?
Yeah.
Yeah. It stops being about Can we give investors a good return on their investment just based on the quality of the product that we're producing? Because what we are looking at is we started making cars to improve transport.
Mm.
And right now, cars are more than just a mode of transport. They become basically a combination of everything. You know, you have your entertainment centers in there. Now, I'm not saying a good sound system in a car is a bad idea. The point I'm trying to make is that have brought about unnecessary complexities, and with that, unnecessary problems, which is why you gotta love Toyota. And the UN and how they make all the cars that they send in the field to endure some of the most inhospitable terrains.
Mercedes and
yeah.
So Audi does the same as well.
So what they do, like what Toyota does is they get them from Toyota Japan, wherever they're getting them from. Then they take them to British Overseas Territory in Gibraltar, the side of Spain. They rip off everything electronic and make sure that it is as mechanical as possible.
Mm.
Now, what does that tell you? That tells you that, yes, electronic components comes with a lot of convenience. But they also come with extra cost in terms of maintenance.
Mm.
If you want something that is long lasting, go back to the basics. Which is why if you look at a lot of car enthusiasts, they are not looking for the latest model of a car. They are looking for the oldest model of a car
and in the best condition of the car.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to a car tuning enthusiast, there are two Japanese brands that you'll find that are mostly sought after, especially in the American markets. That's the R34 Skyline, Nissan, and the Toyota Supra.
Mm.
Now, the reason why, especially the Toyota Supra, is 1998, 1999, because I think they started making them from 1992 all the way. Is it 1990 all the way to the early 2000s?
Yeah.
The engine came with, a record, at least on paper, it produced about 270 horsepower. But it's made out of, it's a cast iron block. That means it can withstand a lot of tuning without blowing apart. So that's why when it comes to modifying a Supra when it comes to modifying a 2JZ from a Supra, you can push that thing from 270 horsepower all the way to 1,000 horsepower without blowing in your face.
Mm.
So that's why when someone drives around the 90 Supra, car enthusiasts will beg you to sell it to them, and you'll be wondering, it's just an old car, why?
Mm.
It's all technology that no one makes anymore. Because if you look at most of the engines you find right now, if you push them to that level, you are bound to run into serious issues.
Yeah.
The picture that draws is a lot of enthusiasts like to go back to the classics. Because that's when things used to, when people were making mechanical components. Because right now everything has been, everything has become electronic.
Mm.
I think it also has something that has to do with maintenance. You're the one that told me the story of, what's that? How much does one headlight Fortuna cost again?
No, not the Fortuna, it's the Hilux Baki. Now somewhere, and it's not even the bulb that I'm talking about. It's now
the whole thing.
It's now a whole thing that you just unplug, like a Lego block. You just unplug it and you plug it back in. Literally, the stories are like between 15 and 25,000 if that thing breaks. That just that thing that has the light, that last thing that has a light in it, with its electrical plug-ins at the back, or its sockets at the back. Literally, 25,000 if that thing breaks.
Have you read the story of one? I think that guy is based in the US. He's a CEO, and he said a millionaire or billionaire. He bought a Bugatti Veyron or Chiron, one of the Bugatti variants.
Mm.
So he crashed it, and then he called Bugatti to, you know, to sort of like, well, basically to get it fixed. So they gave him a quote and told him, you know what, well, this can be fixed, you know, but, you know, you just have to, I think, auction it to them. And he didn't want to do that. So he said, look, you know what, you know, I just want it to be fixed. It's my car. I bought it after all. So then there was this whole, you know, jumping through the hoops. And it's like, you know what? Fine. I'll just find a car enthusiast that can fix it for me, whether I like it or not. And now Bugatti didn't like that. Mm. And they were like, okay, right. Good luck finding someone that can fix all that. And also good luck finding the parts. See, he found, I think, a father and a son based in the UK. So he just brought it to them and they tore the whole thing apart. We're talking about a multi-million dollar car that's been torn apart. Oh boy, that didn't end well. The first thing that went viral was there were more VW parts on that multi-million dollar car than, you know, that a lot of people were like, hang on a second, so this car is just a VW on the inside. I'm like, who do you people think owns Bugatti?
It wasn't actually VW. It's Audi. But you will find Audi doesn't sell its engines to VW. So my assumption would have been Audi engine. It would have been Audi engines in there.
But Audi engines? No. When it comes to engines, I believe the 2015 Veyron ran a V16 built by VW.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But then I remembered, but Audi has its own supercar. Because Bugatti is also a supercar.
Yeah.
Now, its own supercar that Audi has is the R8, which is the one that also runs in the Le Mans series.
Yeah.
It's most where the car comes from. That turbo diesel V12, I think. Can you believe it? A turbo diesel V12, bro.
Jeez. What are you all doing?
Can you believe that stuff? But anyway, so was it a V8? Is it a V12 or V8? Because I know Bugatti runs V16s only.
Yeah.
Which is two V8 blocks.
Like at this point, I'm just inclined to ask, where are you planning on getting?
Why do you need this much power in your life? Why do we need it? And then after a long time, I heard a V6 the other day for the first time in a long while. It was a BMW that drove past.
Mm.
Also, one of the earlier versions of BMW, I think the 2000 to 2006 version. And I was like, whatever happened to the V6 engines? To the 6-cylinder, because they sound clean. The power is there. There's no, you know, I can hear your bank account from there to here empty in a V8.
Oh yeah, it's definitely going empty.
None of that. It was V6 engines. It was just pure. It was just you hear the power, and then you see the thing. You see the car actually pull away.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we've digressed greatly, guys, from the AI discussion, because you can't see anything with AI.
Well, you are
typing a prompt and the thing is interpreting your prompt for what you want. Which is also a bit boring because, what's the actual aim of the thing then?
When it comes to adopting something something like AI, which raises a lot of questions for countries that are developing like Namibia, and that will be, first of all the information that's being processed and that's being gathered and processed, of which all this response from the prompts are based on, they're not stored here.
Now, that means,
you can build your own data centers, which will cost a lot of money, which you don't have, especially for a lot of developing countries. So, that brings up a question of, now you have to draft your legislations in a way that, in the event of a dispute now arising and you need to get access to the information, how do you go about doing it?
How indeed?
Yeah, unless you have to say that, okay, you know what, there is not a situation that's going to arise that will need you to have access to any of this information.
Mm.
Well, you have to find a solution to how to navigate that stumbling block, because it's a very giant one. When it comes to not just using, just the regulation part, And the reason why, you know, why when we're having this discussion on how to draft up a national policy of regulating AI on a national level just here in Namibia, why it's necessary for everyone to get involved, it's because we are transitioning into the digital age. Didn't I see on Facebook? South Africa, you know, starting to implement digital IDs.
Yeah.
So we're going digital really fast.
Yeah.
So technology is just a matter of, you know, technology, you know, we're going to have to adopt it.
And I'm so afraid of the digital ID space, Ahmed, because the question you have to ask yourself is how are you going to keep this thing if there's a digital ID of you?
So, that's a good question. Why are you going to keep it on your phone? Because that gets stolen.
That can also be...
And that you also need to replace it every now and then.
Yeah.
So that means we're talking about massive cloud storage here.
Yeah.
That's the only solution.
Who's selling the cloud storage to the government?
There you go. Now that brings us to the question of, aren't we jumping the broom here?
Well, very much. Look, Hamid, when we did the data interoperability discussion end of 2024, when we did that data interoperability, what we wanted was government to espouse or to provide certain data that helps economic planners and policymakers to navigate where Namibia's needs actually are. For example, more births equals potentially, how would I say? More births would mean planning for more space in schools, or actually more schools. If you see primarily certain particular places having higher birth rates across the country, go and interrogate what's happening there. And if the versus the place that are starting to have lower birth rates, and going and interrogating those communities, what's actually happening there?
Yeah.
Now, we are bringing in AI, which in my scenario, I don't see it will actually improve data interoperability for Namibia. I don't think it will, because first and foremost, we don't know any labor. We don't have any updated labor statistics to help us navigate what's happening in the Namibian labor market and which sectors are growing, which are declining, which are seeing trends, which are seeing, you know, steady growth, and which are actually causes for concern.
Yeah.
We are not seeing data sets specifically for the alleviation of affordable housing. We still don't know. Okay, we can count, we can divide, because, you know, we estimate things to still be at the 4,500 to the potential 5,000 units that have been delivered since 2015 up until now, which is a pretty slow rate. But the 300,000, has it grown? Has it become more? The 300,000 backlog, has it grown? Has it become more? I bumped into... I don't know if I remember telling you, Helmut, there's a guy that I worked with previously. He was a former colleague of mine. He's now the councillor for Windhoek Rural, which is technically Groto, the Groto constituency. And I bumped into him. I said, his name is Willem. I said, sorry, Willem, for identifying you. He said, and I said, Willem, you have to go and make a case that Groto needs to become a town by itself. The cause for that, Helmut, is... you just need to take a drive for what I'm motivating, and you will see Windhoek is boxed in. Windhoek cannot grow anywhere, Helmut. I'll say it again. Windhoek cannot grow anywhere, even if the...
In terms of expansion?
Yeah.
But it's expanding that side where you needed a Land Cruiser to get to the hospital.
Yeah, but you have Ongos backing it in, it in there in the east, and the Danfeljoen, which is a nature reserve of the government, and then you've got farms around it on that end. You've got farms right here on the other side of Avis, leading past Auersplek into Kleine Cooper. The farms.
When you talk about farms, the boxing in becomes very real.
Literally farms. To the south, you've got the army base, which boxes them in on the one side. Sambabasia can't move anywhere because the highway now literally... the highway and Prosperita boxes in Zimbabwe, and you are only left with the people there in Academia and UNAM who can literally expand across the road into the Kupferberg landfill dump site situation.
The G Just say landfill.
Yeah, Kupferberg is on the other side of that road. It's literally at the highway, at the four-way of the B1, the highway, and this road, which is it Mandume or is it Osia Kotaku, that runs past Academia and Pioneers Park, and you've almost got UNAM on Pioneers Park side. When you stand at that four-way of UNAM, Academia, whatever is there across the road, and the road leading on the other side of the end to Kupferberg, which is a semi-gravel, semi-tarred road. I mean, no one wants to expand in the direction of a landfill, of literally a dump site direction, which is probably a 2, 3, 4, 5 kilometer distance, if you take it. But there's also a roadblock there. Now, when I describe situations like this, specifically here on air, just for Windhoekers and Namibians to see realities on the ground, Windhoek cannot move anywhere. So I in a light discussion with the councillor, with Willem, I said, Willem, you've got to make this case in the council meetings that you're attending, because the unfortunate thing is Windhoek can't go anywhere else, Helmut. The second thing is Windhoek is becoming unaffordable for the everyday Windhoeker, meaning you have a salary, but you have to pay your cab, and you have to buy food, and in certain scenarios, you probably also want to study, and you've got to have this, and you've got to have, and everything is just about you bleeding money around every corner, left, right, and center.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Willem, Gordorp has to become the next small town for commas. It can't just be there, an appendix just hanging there somewhere, there to the south of Windhoek.
You didn't say appendix name, did you?
I meant it. I literally, and I mean it today still. And he told me, nah, Dwight. I know I'm getting into a rural community and developmental discussion, but the AI policy impacts in this particular scenario, because it doesn't take, you don't need an AI to go and tell you, this is supposed to be the next strategy for commas.
Yeah.
Or this is the strategy for Harta. Or this is the strategy for Ochozonjuba. Helmut, you don't need an AI to do that for you. Whatever we need is literally the data interoperability functions, meaning government must have a hell of a lot more computers with servers. So Ministry of Health has a server, Ministry of Home Affairs has a server, and if someone dies in a hospital in Ministry of Health, the data corresponds to data in Ministry of Home Affairs, because Home Affairs registers all births, registers all deaths, registers marriages, registers divorces. Marriages and divorces have to come through Ministry of Justice. Ministry of Justice certify this union. It's not that weird thing I've heard of Zimbabweans who just live together and apparently they are married. It's not that weirdness. No, there's a system to this as well. You know it.
Isn't that like pretty much cohabitation and most of the...
But we do have a cohabitation legislation as well. Yeah. If you've lived with a woman, you and the woman have lived together for 5 years and there's a child.
Yeah.
You can prove that there's a child
cohabitation
from the two of you. Then technically you automatically are married. The legislation literally automates the function. It just, you know, sort of like... greases it over.
Don't make people run away from... Relax, guys. Yes, but go on.
So, but you need the function of the Ministry of Justice to rubber stamp this function of being legally recognized as married.
Yeah.
And you need... Ministry of Justice now has to look after everyone's laws that impact all other ministries. Now, all you need, Helmut...
And for them to do that, they need Minister of Finance.
Exactly. Who needs to approve the budgets that they set. So if one ministry decides not to have on its budget IT ICT upgrades,
everyone is cooked.
So at the heart of everything there, when we, you and I looked at the AI readiness report last year, the assessment report from UNESCO, the AI readiness support literally or report literally highlighted that Namibia has to sort out certain foundational things. Even though this AI's public stakeholder engagement that I also went to observe, its particular aim was to gather as much public input as possible from the public. However, the commas turnout was disappointing.
We literally looked like a kindergarten football team in that hall, because the chairs were empty. But here in the front, we were just like two rows.
Is that
sporadically populated?
Now, is that due to people not showing up, or is just one of those things that is not marketed properly for people to be aware of where it will be taking place and when?
It's the second.
It's the second.
It's pure marketing.
So it's just the whole WhatsApp status marketing.
Basically. So, and the concern is what the PROs are doing, and I'm sorry, PROs, you guys share a lot of stuff for us, but it's not our job to promote it for you. Pay the advertising. Just pay the advertising. So that if they want maximum turnout, how many people are in commerce? If you remember back to the census statistics, how many people are in commerce?
Is it about 400,000-500,000?
Okay, closer to 500. So because it was 490,000.
Yeah.
So there are 490,000 people in commerce. Ne? And if I told you that we were less than 30 in that hall.
What the...
What kind of public stakeholder engagement are we actually having? Because the next day it would have been Kunene in Opuo.
And look, that's...
And I don't know what public stakeholder engagement you expect to get in Opuo or in Kunene. I'm sorry, Kunene and Opuo. Marnostis, you guys are not the beacon of any particular academic advancement. I'm sorry for throwing mud at you guys and for slandering you. But really... You are not the beacons of any particular academic and intellectual.
And that's advice. Dwight. Now there's a break coming.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, I was... Oh, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my tassies is getting warm. Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
The Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala. Onongeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, Big Eye.
Welcome back. 17 past the hour of 5, but before we continue... With Home Run here on Eagle FM with yours truly, Dwight and Helmut. Before we continue, let's take a live read.
IUM's, the International University of Management's traffic advisory for the IUM winter convocation taking place in Ongwediva. The International University of Management, IUM, is proud to announce a historical milestone as it hosts its first ever winter convocation in northern Namibia. The ceremony will take place on Friday, the 15th of May 2026, at the Ongwediva Trade Fair Center and is expected to attract a large number of graduates, families, and dignitaries.
Members of the public are advised to expect increased traffic volumes in and around Ongwediva, particularly near the Trade Fair Center, between 6 a.m. and 3 p.m. on the day of the event. If you will be attending, please note, or please take note, gates will open at 6 a.m. and will strictly close at 7 a.m. Let me say that again. Gates will open at 6 a.m. and will strictly close at 7 a.m. No entry will be permitted after 7 a.m. Guests are also informed that babies and toddlers will not be permitted inside the venue. Attendees are encouraged to plan their journey in advance, arrive early, and join IUM in celebrating this memorable occasion. The public is also urged to exercise patience and caution to ensure the safety of all road users during this important occasion. IUM extends its heartfelt congratulations to all graduates and looks forward to celebrating this memorable event together. Thank you for your cooperation.
Vilvicha University 2026 July applications are now open. Faculty of Health Sciences, a postgraduate diploma in Community Health Nursing Level 8. Admission requirements. Admission requirements: have a recognized nursing qualification at NQF level 7 or higher from any recognized high learning institution. Must be a registered nurse/midwife with a Nursing Council of Namibia HPCNA. A minimum of two years working experience as a nurse/midwife in any health facility. Must write a short essay describing the motivation for pursuing postgraduate diploma in community health nursing. Qualification duration, 1 year. Mode of delivery, full-time. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Vilvicha University, where everyone is an achiever. So, back to, now, let's talk about something that, two things that I picked up in that, in terms of the application of AI and the need for the regulation. But still, the painful part is there are less than 30,
Ahmed. That's how much we were.
Okay, before I even get my point of the application I picked up from the engagement, the good thing is there is the use of technology in putting it out there. But the thing is, one of the things that we pride ourselves of in terms of regulations is that we do public consultations to ensure transparency. But if people are not showing up, and people can be, you know, there are two reasons why people may not show up. One, they're just lazy and they don't show up. That's also a reason. But and then you have reason number two, some of them could have showed up if you were just if you'd have put in the effort to put the information out there, which from the look of things, due to the lack of paying for advertising to get the information out there, is most likely to be the case.
Yep. And so that goes for all stakeholder engagements. All.
Look,
not just industry ones.
That negates the whole point of consultations.
No, not really, Helmut, because let me do this.
You're doing consultations for the whole region and 30 people shows up.
Basically, yeah. That's the negation activity, meaning the result after you were hoping that people were communicating on your behalf. Now, I've been observing this since I've become a journalist in terms of where the PROs believe we must give them free exposure. Through they say, here's a notice, please do this and please do that and please do this.
Okay, now just one question. Don't these guys all have like a marketing budget?
I don't know. And if you do ask them, for example, our lovely colleague here, Monica, will also testify to what I'm now saying, is that in many cases, they don't think about advertising. Now, if we are supposed to have a detailed engagement, or we're trying to find maximum representation on subject matter from all walks of life in the country, how is it that we literally don't understand the basis of saying, you've got to promote what you wish to achieve? Because if you are going to bank on the, I hope.
They put it on their WhatsApp status.
I hope a journalist will write a short little thing there. I hope, and the journalist turns around and says, now pay me for it. Why am I doing the heavy lifting for you? Well, why didn't you pay for the thing? So the bigger concern, Helmut, is that many of these PROs, I know, I've seen, like, for example, at my alma mater at NUST, I've seen the public relations, because my degree in your final year, the second semester, we had three specializations. So your first semester and your final year would have been your internship. But when I ended, the three specializations was the journalism specialization, the public relations specialization, and the digital media, which is now, at the same institution, a whole department by itself.
On its own.
The digital arts and...
The one that was...
launched last year.
Yeah.
Now it's a whole department by itself. It should have been a whole department by itself when that department, which I'm, you know, a product of, was also established. But I'm digressing once again. So, in many cases, most of the students in the final year, in the third year, selected either the journalism or the public relations strands for their specialization. And there were always too few students left for the digital strand itself, or the digital branch itself. So at the heart of this particular discussion, you could see, okay, so you either go into PR or you either go into journalism. But here's the big catch. PR is a subset of my previous qualification, marketing. It's a subset of marketing. And PR is also a subset of journalism. PR is not superior to journalism, and it's not superior to marketing. But yet, in that PR strand, they were taught how to do advertising budgeting. They were taught advertising budgeting and advertising, how to schedule around advertising, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you're training a whole bunch of people who were doing for the first 2 years how to think like journalists, you're now training them in their final year to suddenly think about capturing audiences and selling a product to audiences. That's what you think? So the bigger concern, obviously, has been the PROs don't realize what they need to do. Now, if you're going to ask me, Dwight, do you think the public stakeholder engagement that I attended, that I went to observe, was actually representative of Windhoek, of Comas region? I'll flat out tell you no. We didn't even reach 10%, which is 49,000 people of that thing, of representation. 5% of that is 4,900. We didn't even reach 5% level of the overall Comas population. So, who would be driving actual stakeholder or policy or national AI policy development? What do you think, Helmut, probably was the representation in Kunene, in Opuo? If Kunene has three major urban settlements, the administrative capital is obviously Opuo, but it's Opuo, Korihas, and Ochu. Now you drive all the way to Opuo, but you're ignoring Korihas and you're ignoring Ochu.
And there's like supposed to do consultations in all those towns separately.
You know, why is it not regional consultations? If you're in a region, you schedule three dates. If you see there are three towns, you schedule three dates.
I would go with that because, take for example, if you go to Kavango East and you just hold it in Rundu, it's not on God's green earth am I driving from Divundu
to Rundu.
No way.
No, definitely. Or you are in, what's the one's name? In Ochozonchupa.
Yeah.
But you've got Grootfontein, Otjiwarongo, Omaruru, and Okahangia. Now you just want to host everything in Otjiwarongo. Now who's going to drive 2 hours from Grootfontein? And who's going to drive another 2 hours from Okahangia? And who's going to drive from Omaruru all the way there? No one.
Who's driving from Gam? Because Gam is 100 kilometers from Tsumukwe.
On the other side. Of Grootfontein.
And look, I don't care how much I like
it. Gam is literally against the border.
I don't care how much you say you like AI. There's no way on God's green earth. Am I driving from Gam
to come and listen to you in Ochvarongo?
You know what that would mean?
Mm.
I will have to come maybe a day or two in advance.
And then where do you stay? Who do you know? Let's say on the bad luck side, you are someone who does not know anyone in Ochvarongo.
Yeah. You don't have
and you're there, and you're there for a coffee, a tea, a water, and maybe a brejan. That's your public stakeholder engagement's worth. Which doesn't translate into the amount of effort and petrol and accommodation costs that you have spent just to come and listen about AI.
You see,
which you probably don't even touch yet where you live in Gam.
270 kilometers from Grootfontein to Tsumkwe, I believe.
Mm.
About only 50 kilometers of that is tarred road. The rest is, may God be with you, gravel.
Yeah.
And then you add on another 100 kilometers from from Tsumkwe to Gam, or 50 kilometers to border to Dobe border post.
Mm.
Yeah. You have got to expand the whole, you know, consultation if you want it to reach as much people as possible. And that's one thing that I really appreciated that it was emphasized in the discussion.
Mm.
Now, that will bring me to the point, to my point of what was pointed, you know, during the consultation about the wider application that that AI is already visible in. It's already visible in education. It's already visible in, in medicine. And technology is actually widespread, and there is nothing wrong with it. But as in everything else, regulation is needed because things are always going to go wrong. And when it goes wrong, to maintain order, to make sure that you don't end up with an army of, of Bruce Wayne's going full,
Batman.
Yeah, Batman in terms of just revenge because the law is not. The law is not solving my problems. I'll just do it myself.
No, I mean, Bruce Wayne, you do know how Bruce Wayne is a lot. He's a major discussion of unresolved psychological issues. He's not the best example you can use.
Those issues are coming from him witnessing his parents being murdered.
That is true.
Yeah. And he just used his very... a lot of money to go and train a lot of how to, arrange meetings between those that were he ran into and their maker. Just, he was there to facilitate.
A passage of rights.
Mm-hmm. Passage of rights.
Like last rights.
Mm-hmm.
In its earnest, guys.
Yeah. He was, he's a little like Namra, but he doesn't do consultation. He just, just send you in there. He doesn't tell you why this,
Namra put in this, Amun?
They make sure, they're just there to regulate, this can come in the country, this known. This can come in the country under this and these conditions. Yeah.
Yeah, but, we'll make whoever is bringing it in pay more. Don't worry. Don't worry. You just bring it in. They have to come get it from us.
Yeah. Now, why am I saying the application? Why am I saying the whole applications? It's a fascinating thing to talk about in terms of AI. For one, it's already applied on a very wider scale. There is not a student that will tell you they haven't used AI.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I like about AI, and which I use AI a lot. I use ChatGPT and DeepSeek a lot. Is that every time that I'm writing something, I want to get a template of how it will come out.
Mm.
Yeah. So I'll just feed in the prompt and then hit enter, and then take the template I thought I'll just take everything and then just copy it and paste and then verify the sources. And I was disappointed from day one because when out of the 10 sources that were provided, I realized that 7 of them were dead end. In other words, they were non-existent.
Yeah.
Like, this is pretty useless. Because it would make a lot of sense if those sources could be referenced. Was something real, because then I could. And because my idea was, I would just go to those sources and then go through the sources and then maybe see what I can change from the information that's already provided.
I had the same thinking once.
No, it doesn't. Seven out of the 10 sources provided were thumbsucked.
Helmut, even, and I realize this also happens, very seldomly, the searches that I get, and this is all my Google searches. So you Google search something, then the AI pops up with its summary in front of you.
Yeah.
But now the AI says yes to your answer that you asked. And it sort of like gives you those little icons of the supposed reference material.
Mm-hmm.
You go press on any one of them. Then you are trying to look for the actual yes to the question that the AI summarized to you.
Yeah.
You won't find it.
It's like, not like in the passage.
Like you said. Then you end up reading the whole article if you are in the mindset of like thinking like an academic. Mm. Let me verify for myself.
Yeah.
Let me fact check for myself. And then you realize, oh my goodness, what did this AI just do? Did this AI really hallucinate and actually lie to me? I'll give you another example.
Yeah.
So remember the affordability about micro lending discussion we had the other day.
Yeah.
So I wrote an article, obviously, for the e-paper. It wasn't in, I think, this past Monday's e-paper yesterday. But still, I submitted the article. I actually thought I submitted it the previous week, but I only submitted it now on Sunday again because our editor told me to, I'd stop pointing fingers if you're going to make claims. You better have your facts straight. And I was like, oh, okay, sorry. You know, friendly fire, sure. So I read through the article. I obviously transcribed from the conversation between the three entities that the panel, the Standing Committee on Economy and Industry
met with.
And the minister said a few things that I just directly transcribed. And I had to make sure that they obviously were said also in the correct tone.
Mm-hmm.
So as to obviously not misconstrue something that the minister is saying. And then there was one such particular sentence. So literally what I said in the audio is that the minister is saying, not that someone, there's legislation and there are systems in place specifically like for the public sector or the public service, that no one should take a salary less than a third home. However, the sentence that I actually had to fact check and verify was actually the opposite. You know, deductions should not be more than a third on your salary, which is the opposite end of that description. Not that you should go home with less than a third. Going home with less than a third implies, Helmut, you can put deductions on top of the known state deductions like tax, social security, what's the other ones? Tax, social security, and your pension. Those are also deductions. And those three deductions alone can be a third of your salary in some cases in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you put on what we looked at, what the public service had, that deduction code mechanism, the payment deduction, PDMS, payment deduction management system situation that they obviously outsource to a third party that manages that situation for the public sector.
Mm-hmm.
If you add on more deductions, technically that also implies then, additional deductions, which technically then pushes actual subtractions into a midway point of the salary. It goes from a third to literally half or 50%.
Yeah.
Now, either way, it is still something, the minister still said something in the public hearing. And obviously when you go and look at labor law or the actual labor legislation, it says something else. So in that scenario, just sort of like to keep what the minister said on the safe side of in terms of what she said in the presentation was, use what is in law. Use what is actually said.
Yeah.
That no
follow
one
the legislation.
Follow the legislation. Even though the minister said it there, literally follow what the legislation says. So that's also the level of verifying and fact-checking, for example, that our profession has to go through, us, the media professionals, yeah. the media practitioners. But imagine now if I was not that kind of person. Imagine now, Helmut, if you weren't the kind of person who was also trained to verify a source.
Mm-hmm.
What do you, what madness do you think probably is already existing in the media landscape?
You'd be, you know, copying and pasting.
Because I've heard the accusations from other media platforms specifically where the sub-editors, a sub-editor, from what I know, a sub-editor is someone that actually edits the overall text.
Yeah.
They're the ones that go through and make sure, and they do the verifying and they do the fact-checking for you on your behalf as well. Even though you as the journalist, you're also trained in the fact-checking exercise. But
the more the merrier.
Yeah, but it's just another extra layer of ensuring that the copy is actually, you know, speak is sound. You know,
yeah.
It's literally sound. So the sub-editors at one stage, and this was at a overall media engagement back in last year, the sub-editors were also saying, yeah, we know who are the ones who were written, who were literally writing Namlish. And just yesterday, they started writing Cambridge English. We know who you are. And that is obviously becoming some of the things, because many of the journalists don't know that they are training the AI models.
Yeah.
And that these models also now, they obviously also have predictive text. You've seen predictive text.
Yeah.
Yeah. They also have predictive text. So they would predict where your sentence is going. And as the thing predicts where your sentence is going, you just go and hit enter. Let their sentence end there. Just to realize by the next time, you know, when the thing comes out and there's a nightmare or there's a bomb popping off in terms of, you know, publicity and who wrote what and who said what and what article.
Yeah.
It, you find out that that's actually not what the person said.
Yeah, like,
and you filled in a part of the person's statement with something they actually did not say.
AI will be there like, well, I didn't do it.
You know, we
it
we,
wasn't me.
We tried to predict where your sentence was going, you know? There's nothing you can do. Sam Altman will tell you, nah, that's a different jurisdiction.
Yeah, no, that's not us.
That's not us.
That's on you.
Yeah, but I use ChatGPT. Yeah, still, bruh, you know, you had to know what you were doing. That's why you proofread your own work or what we produce for you. So the big concern out of this, Asamu, is that it's not a complete thing. It's not a one size fits all. It's not a.
No, it's not.
It's not a. It's not the proverbial, you know, plaster that solves all pains and issues in production wherever you find yourself. Yeah, it doesn't.
You know where I'm seeing the, pardon my language, the stupidity in this whole thing.
Yeah,
is a fact checking requires research.
It does.
Yeah. To fact check your work, you need to do a deep research to basically look at all the sources that were referenced by the AI model you are using and make sure that it's actually saying what, you know, those sources are saying what is, you know, what your, what appeared, in the response that you got after you fed in your prompt.
Mm.
When you look at the amount of time and effort that goes into verifying all those sources to make sure that, this source is, first of all, it exists.
Yeah.
And it's saying what it's, this source says what the AI response gave you. At that point, you may as well just, skip the AI and do the research yourself.
Exactly.
So, because of that, you know, because by skipping the whole AI application and basically just doing the research by just conducting or, you know, getting all the trusted sources yourself and getting all the information yourself, you save yourself a headache of having to verify and verify and verify. Mm. Look, if I'm sitting in the National Library, first of all, the whole thing is very well arranged. You have psychology, this side you have business, this side you have, you have education, you have medicine, dictionaries, law, and everything. So everyone knows their section.
Mm.
If you're doing medicine, you know which section you're going to go. If you're doing psychology, you know which section you're going to go. And you have a recommendation of books. that you are supposed to use. Mm. So you just go straight to, you know, to your section. You just find all this, you just find all the right books. You get all those books and you just go to your cubicle and then you go one by one, from one book to the next, getting all the information that you need and, giving all the authority to the authors of those books and you're done. But if I have to do that online, I will have to, after generating five pages, yes, that's fast. I mean, in less than a minute, everything is generated.
Mm.
And then you look at the amount of energy and effort that's needed for you to go through and verify all that. It takes just as long as it would for you to do the work actually, yourself.
Yeah. And writing and summarizing and paraphrasing in your own words.
Yeah.
And thus citing where you got the words from. So as to make sure that you can submit the work that you've actually put in. But do you think that is literally what the tech bros brought to us, Helmut?
That's why I'm saying that, with AI, look, AI is good at a lot of things. But using it for, especially right now, using it especially to draft legislations, bad idea. And using it to do any type of academic work without any verification, again, terrible idea. Why? It's AI is supposed to make your life easy when it comes to compiling any type of, take for example, academic works that we'd like to do. But then, with an extended verification process of you having to make sure that all the references that you are provided by the AI actually exist and that actually they say what the AI is claiming the sources say.
Mm.
And believe me, that verification process, and I've done that, that verification process takes just as long as it would take you to do the work yourselves, which is why I just skip the whole AI process and just go straight to the library and do it myself. And that I've come to learn that it saves me a lot of headache of trying to wonder, oh boy, does this source even say this? Because I know this is the book I got it from. Commercial break.
Okay, hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying,
my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm.
Just give it more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Not for mense under the age of 18. Welcome back. We continue.
No, you're actually right.
Oh.
18, but you have to say it quickly. 18.
Not 18.
No, there is no chen between ach and teen.
Oh, so you're right when you say it like it's that. You sound like ach is chaning, so.
It's acht and teen.
Languages are awesome. So 15 minutes left to the hour of 6. You're still listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And we're still having a discussion on a terribly attended AI stakeholder engagement. They just wanted to emphasize that. And now, when it comes to the use of AI, what I'm seeing, the redundancy I'm seeing here is that the AI is supposed to save me time when it comes to, by making my work easier when I'm doing, take for example, my schoolwork. Except you can't just feed it through AI and then submit the whole thing because, believe me, that's how you get zero. So that means... and
imagine putting it through Tenai. You're not Tenai. What's the plagiarism tool?
I'm not familiar, I'm not well familiar with plagiarism tool because after the whole verification disappointment, I just decided to go, the whole old school.
What is that plagiarism tool's name? No, the plagiarism tool is now used by the big universities.
Oh, yeah. So they are used by that students didn't.
So you've got to feed in your last draft of your assignment into that tool. And that tool then makes sure that if it's a group assignment, that no one is...
I hate those.
And that's the basis that I also hate the group assignments because you get lazy colleagues as well. Yeah. And literally,
if it finds above 50%. Now, there was a subject I had, contemporary issues, where the lecturer said, for every percentage of, like, for every percentage, no? For every 10% that the plagiarism tool
detects
plagiarism in your work,
yeah,
it's minus 10 marks.
Okay.
So it was a painful thing. It was literally painful, Ahmed. And we were given a threshold of at least 15%. Then it would be at a zero level. The risk of being marked negatively would be at a zero level, a 0% level. So we had to literally chase a level of below 20%. No one could obviously establish at 15 or at even at 10%. But one of the things that made me very angry the one time with the one group assignment was everyone just copied, and I told this example before, everyone just went and found their sources for each question. You get like a question with sub-questions.
Yeah.
And the sub-questions have to answer the question at the top.
The overall question, yeah.
So I delegated to everyone, you take a question, go and research,
get and then we're compiling.
And I thought my colleagues in my group would just literally paraphrase what they say and saw,
yeah,
write what they understood from the question and the response of the work that they searched up and found, and send it to me like in a complete format. I just copy from that document, paste it into the question, compile and compress and edit.
You're like, you know what, we're
and
down.
Make everything look good and nice. I filled in my part, paraphrased it and summarized it and explained it. All that.
Mm.
No. Literally, when I fed it into that plagiarism tool, that tool came back and said almost like 60%.
Jeez.
Because what the colleagues did was literally copy and paste it and send it like that to me. Without even reading, understanding, defining. They just copied and pasted and sent it to me. Now, in teamwork, I hate it. I hate it when you are given your work. But our work together has to come to a full product.
Yeah.
But you slack up on your side. But I'm out here performing at 100%, you know, all persons running. I'm trying to act all well, you know, well oiled, and I've apparently had my jet fuel in my belly in terms of, you know, I ate my breakfast. But on that side.
Now I have a zero because of you, are you?
Exactly. Which is not nice. And we were punished somewhat because the lecturer gave us a chance. He said, okay, fix this thing up. Tomorrow morning, I want to see a proper thing, but it's minus 10%. It's minus 10% automatically because you submitted late.
Not minus 10 marks. It's minus 10%.
Well, it's still the same thing because they were marking
it's out of 100.
Yeah.
Okay.
They were anyway marking in percentages.
Yeah.
So, I had to go and explain back as group leader, explain back to my group, and I told them, hey, listen, guys, since we all fumbled the basics of this assignment, the basics were go and read up, answer your question, write out your answer, and submit the content. We are automatically facing a minus 10 in this assignment. I explained it to them. They were all unhappy. I just explained it because they knew who was at fault. And I saw all the responses.
Like, you know what? We are not pointing fingers.
Yes, so we all know.
We have a problem here, so let's focus on the solution.
So I had to rewrite, recompile, resubmit it into the thing, continuously resubmit, because the thing even shows you which sentences sound suspect in terms of plagiarism.
Mm-hmm.
Resubmit, rewrite those sentences, reprint, re-everything, every time, multiple times. Had to sit and do it until the next day where I could submit the thing. I was greatly annoyed. But I was annoyed. Which led to me doing the second assignment myself. I told them, I'll do it myself. Guys, whatever you do, don't.
Just go and chill.
Do anything. You can get drunk on my behalf. Just don't touch an assignment. So, obviously from that particular indication, I'm not saying that I'm perfect in any manner, but in some cases you realize that there are certain subjects or certain things in life that you don't want to, you don't want to mess up.
Nope.
The particular, you know, the chance to finish this hurdle.
Now, 8 minutes into the hour of six, and I would like to point out one of the dangers of AI and the need for regulation and proper consultations.
Yeah.
That starts with marketing, and don't worry, we are here. We can do it for you. Not for free, obviously. Last week, the Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni took to Facebook and wrote the following. In recent days, several fake images of me have been generated using artificial intelligence and passed off as real by some overzealous opponents. Mm. I must admit that whoever created them even improved my appearance quite a bit. Turns out she's a comedian.
She's also sarcastic.
She went on to point out that the issue goes beyond me.
Yeah.
That deepfakes are a dangerous tool, and this is in AI deepfakes. Deepfakes are dangerous tools because they target anyone. I can defend myself. Of course, you can. She's a prime minister.
She's got the whole law.
Yeah. I can defend myself. Many others cannot. Mm. For this reason, one rule should always apply. Verify before believing and think before sharing. Mm. Because today it happens to me and tomorrow it could happen to anyone. Mm. One thing when it comes to domestic violence against men debate is not something that you peer a lot, but there's a whole debate out there. Is that, especially in the Western world, the biggest story that came out of that sphere was the Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. Now, and even that was, that case dragged on and costed millions. Now, one point that one man made was that, there are a lot of men that are going through that, but they don't have the capabilities in terms of financing to basically go to that extent that costs millions for them to prove that they are actually the victim. Mm. Yeah. There are only two things that say, that helped Johnny Depp get out of that. And it also ruined his career. He's rich and he's a celebrity. And the most important thing is that Amber Heard is a terrible actor.
No, Hamut.
She showed up in court saying, "My dog stepped on a bee," and then went viral.
No, Hamut. Do you know what actually saved him?
Yeah.
It's his two ex-girlfriends. The testimony of his two ex-girlfriends. The one that he has the children with,
mm-hmm.
the French woman, and the other actress, Winona Ryder, that he dated in the 90s and 80s. He was technically also married to Winona. That those two women
mm-hmm.
defended Johnny.
They told him, "Yeah, you know what?
They were like, look, this guy beat a woman.
Beat you.
This guy is shorter than you.
Then he beat you."
But you are right. Because in the game of perception, which obviously AI is now being used in, which is Meloni's particular concern right now, which is also the other concern from the streamer that I made mention of, Johnny Somali. Who's now going to face what is that thing? Prison labor. His sentence is prison labor in South Korea for also deepfaking apparently his relationship with a Korean national, a woman.
So hang on a second. I can now use AI to fake a relationship with my crush.
Yeah.
Regulators,
especially if you are in South Korea.
Regulators are in serious trouble.
No, the South Koreans are ahead of the curve of this technology.
In terms of regulation.
Yeah. There's a separate law for mm-hmm. deepfaking, and there's a separate law for using AI.
Mm-hmm. That's for South Korea.
For South Korea. Specifically for to impersonate something or to create a fictitious reality mm-hmm. of something. And Homo is facing... besides the other five counts of public disturbance, commercial disturbance, and public transport disturbance, besides the other five counts he's actually being charged for,
mm-hmm.
the ones where he used deepfake, which deepfake is obviously a technology that runs on an AI system.
Yeah.
Because the AI has to superimpose a photo or something of someone's face.
Very convincing one.
On a specific, in a specific setting. And that is up to ultimately what Johnny Somali did. Now, poor Somali, not poor, really. His own dad literally told him, "Brah, you're on your own in South Korea. Sharp.
Actions have consequences."
No, his dad told him, literally, "Don't come back. Don't call us. Don't know us. We won't know you." His dad literally said that to him.
Yeah, that's a no. That's a dad that wants to teach you that you screw up, you do the time.
Yeah, and he literally had almost he had the whole of Japan against him, because just the previous month he was in Japan when he was committing those things in South Korea. Just the previous month he was in Japan. Then he decided when the Japanese police, you know, were literally following everywhere, because the Japanese police later on, when they become suspicious of you as a foreigner, they follow you everywhere to see what's your next move. Until you get to your hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you come out your hotel the next morning, the Japanese police are there waving at you saying, "Yeah, we want to see what you're going to do again."
Yeah.
So he then started labeling out, because he was making those weird jokes for his audience online. He was saying, "Yeah, it was a good thing that Nagasaki and Hiroshima was happening." He made
seriously?
All those yeah, he made all those statements.
You make all those jokes
just to get
of
money.
All the places in Japan.
Just to get the money. Just to be paid, because the how you get paid as a streamer is the donations that your audience gives you.
Yeah, that's so also a way to get yourself killed.
So technically, Johnny Somali was acting like he was acting like a true, very mean, careless clown.
Just stupid. Just yeah. Plain stupid.
He goes to South Korea. The South Koreans have been seeing all this crap online.
Yeah, coming out of Japan.
Coming out of Japan from Johnny Somali. Now, Japanese are a little bit more polite, but they just stay away from you. Even though they are now have become more events of American, and it's mostly Americans. American streamers, they call them in real life IRL streamers, who have now been getting like random punches for streaming somewhere in Tokyo.
Yeah, I remember. I think there was this other guy that got in an all female train.
It's that guy, the guy that started dancing next to the school girls.
Yeah, he was told, "Dude, don't do that."
And then the Japanese men stood up and said, "Sit down. Just chill." There was a couple of other streamers just after Johnny Somali who just got random punches and were being chased by Japanese locals. So Somali goes to South Korea, to Seoul, the capital, and then he starts streaming. Now, what happened was that there was another streamer who literally took it upon himself, a South Korean, who literally put a bounty out on Johnny Somali.
Hey.
Who literally said the person, any person
that will punch this
who
guy
punches
in the face.
This guy wherever they see him gets $100 or something like that, or $1,000 or something like that value for doing so. Just record it and share it. Just make his life hell in South Korea, because they realized what he was doing in Japan was a disrespectful thing. Look, the Japanese, the South Koreans, and the Chinese have their issues with each other.
Yeah.
But the moment they realize you did, because the Asians, specifically the Far East Asians, have this culture of literally like social protocols.
Yeah. And they're very strict on that.
And social norms and social actions. Like, how much we are in Namibia, we are people that shower every day and we put on deodorant every day.
Mm-hmm.
In Japan, your deodorant mustn't smell to anything. The moment you get onto a public bus and on a public train, you shouldn't disturb the nostrils of the person next to you.
Just because you are wearing some fancy cologne.
But here's the concern. The people they know come from Europe and from North America.
Mm-hmm.
And those are not people that wash every day.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought that tradition died a long time.
The Europeans and Americans are not people that wash every day. I'll say it again. They don't wash every day.
I knew that, but that I thought that was a long time ago. You still practiced?
No, Albert. No. They don't wash every day. So, which was the old age, the old adage that came out from Europe, because the Frenchman was the ones that perfected perfume.
Yeah.
That the more perfume a Frenchman wears, the dirtier he is.
So, the whole idea behind fragrance was to mask. Oh, come on.
So, yeah, so They have a lot of social protocols based upon mannerisms, gender, gender roles, interactions between genders.
Yeah, culture age groups, and tradition for them is
all that.
Yeah, look, I think that's something that everyone should know about Asians at this point, because wherever they go, they take their culture with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, what's one thing that Asians are known for here? Well, eating establishments. Yeah. And when you show up at their eating establishment, they are not serving the McDonald's, KFC, no. You find a lot of Asian diets.
You find their food.
Their food in their establishments. And you'll find them wearing their attire.
Yeah.
You're not going to find them in a tuxedo just because it's well, no. So it's their food, and you'll find, it's an obsession for me when it comes to Asian food at this point. That wherever, every time I eat at these places, one thing I find is they have two options. Would you like a fork or chopsticks?
Mm.
Yeah.
They don't really have a spoon, China.
I tried chopsticks the first time. Boy, I was so terrible.
Mm.
The ladies at the restaurant gave me chopsticks to take home to go and practice. That's how bad it was.
That happens, Amun. It happens. It really happens.
That poor lady. I'm like, you know what? Thanks, guys.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, but thanks to YouTube, I now, you know, my chopsticks skills are top notch. So, I haven't seen that man in a while.
He was at UNAM for the graduation of UNAM.
Uh-huh.
He literally gave a speech where he started with, "My family told me not to be mischievous. Boy. My family told me not to cause any problems or be mischievous. So I'm not going to cause problems and be mischievous." I was like, what is this uncle saying?
Okay, my first question would have been, how old are you, 10?
what is he doing? Why is he coming up there trying to sort of like put his family in sort of like in hot water for the advice they told him? Please, don't do anything which, you know,
look,
is not part of protocol for graduation ceremonies.
Not a rocket scientist. He made it sound like he, you know, have you seen Elvin and the Chipmunks?
Mm.
Everywhere Dev goes, he has to warn Elvin. Please, Elvin, behave.
And Elvin every time goes like, what? what will I do?
Right, that brings us to the end of... my family told me. I know. When it comes to my gender, that means my wife told me.
Mm.
But it's a David time with business and economic segment. Until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. From yours truly here, you all have a good evening.
And let's see each other again, same time, same place, guys. Yeah, enjoy the rest of your evening. Stay tuned for David and the BS. And we'll be back tomorrow again, same time, same place again.
And if you see on social media a picture of me and you on a date somewhere in the Maldives, then you are also in the Maldives. Let's not complicate things here.